Welcome to the show, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Braden Gall, Corey Curtis, News 2 Sports Director. Thank you guys out there in Nashville for joining us here on your morning drive to work. Chase McCabe, of course, producing. We've got Intern of Smooth back there hanging out doing the intern stuff, whatever it is that interns do on a radio show. Corey, you can follow him on Twitter, at Corey Curtis 2. Rick Bird joining us here, the head coach of your Belmont Bruins, still sitting in first place of the OVC, one game up on Murray State after a couple of big wins over the weekend on the road, coach, against Eastern Kentucky and Morehead State last weekend. How you doing, coach? How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
So what did you learn about your team? Again, I feel like I've talked to you a lot this year where you're coming off like 30-point wins and 18-point wins. And after so many of those, is there anything to learn, or do you learn every day? Maybe explain that process to me as a coach.
I think you're imagining some of those 30-point wins. We did have one last Thursday at Eastern Kentucky, and we just came out and made everything early and jumped on top of them, and they're struggling a little bit, and that's not a good formula for a team that's struggling when the other team's making everything. The Morehead State game Saturday was much more competitive there. Both those teams are at the bottom of the conference, but Morehead State has lost four games, four one-possession games, and they've lost, I think, 8 of their 10 losses are single-digit losses. They're very competitive and plenty good, and that was a good win for us. As far as learning about a team, I thought the Morehead State win was an interesting way to go about it. They were determined to keep us from making threes, and I thought our guys did a good job of finding other ways to score. Dylan Winner didn't make a three. Austin Luke didn't make a three. Amanze Ekekeza only made one. Not the formula we usually would have to score a lot of points. So it was good to see Kevin McClain have a big night. Tyler Haddon did some really good things. Just some guys that Nick Hopkins made three threes. You know, Not the guys that are probably all conference guys this year, but it's important that everybody contribute and that everybody, that someone every night has a big night. I mean, it was a big night for Kevin. So it was a good week. Two good wins. Anytime you're on the road, it's good.
Coach, we talked about the importance of March in your league, but I think with the double bye in the OVC, it does put a priority on the regular season and achieving in the regular season, doesn't it?
It does. I'm not a big fan of the double bye. I think it's not necessarily about that part of it. That part's pretty good, but I think that when you have, you're going to have ties in a conference. And when ties start to turn in, if you have to win only two games versus three for a team in the same division, and maybe even only two games for a team, it has to go. So you tie for second, third, fourth, and fifth, and somebody's going to have to win two, and somebody's going to have to win four, and they hit the same record. You know, we have lost our first-round game as the league champion the last 2 years. And it's the team that beats you or that plays you, played the night before on the in the facility. You haven't played in a week now. I would rather have the 18, eight place one, two place seven kind of thing, and have a three game tournament for everybody.
Rick Bird joining us here, of course. Belmont over the weekend will take on Tennessee State, of course, here in Nashville, coming up on Thursday evening at 7:30. Coach, you and I have talked off the air a couple of different times about analytics and just sort of the role it's played in the game. And then last week we talked a little bit about your former tape study and statistics study back when you got started and how different it is and how it's changed with technology. Why are you such a big believer in analytics, and you know, why do you think that you sort of got on that train ahead of the curve?
I don't know how much ahead of the curve I am. I just think it's always made sense to try to take what you can out of statistics and evaluate them in a way that helps you determine really who played better. And I've used rebounding as an example for a long time. Somebody was saying, you know, this team out rebound, you know, we got out rebounded 30-22 today. Well, they may have got 30 because we missed a whole bunch of shots, and they didn't. And the defensive team is going to get two-thirds of the rebounds on average. And I also think it's you know, just points per game. I mean, if it takes a guy 20 shots to get 20 points per game, and it takes another guy 10 shots to get 15 points a game, the other guy's more efficient offensively, and you should be using him more. So, you know, this the old-fashioned points per game. And the same thing goes on with team stats. I see, you know, this team's leading the country in defense because they hold teams to 53 points a game. Well, they may be the slowest team in the country offensively, and there's not nearly as many possessions, and the other team's not going to score. Doesn't mean they're not a good defensive team. I'm sure they are, but it's not the best way to determine it. The best way to determine it is points per possession that your defense gives up, or points per possession that you score is the best offensive team.
Rick Bird joining us here. Big fan of points per possession. I'm a big fan of that one, too. Belmont takes on both the women and the men, take on Tennessee State across town, 5:30 and 7:30. Tickets are just $12. You can get them there. There's a couple of links there at the Belmont Twitter account, at BelmontMBB on Twitter. Coach, you know, Dana Ford and TSU, they're up over 500 in conference play. What have you seen from that team and how they've developed?
Well, they're probably a team that from the beginning of conference play to this point that just improved the most. I think it's the best offensive team Dana's had, and not saying they're not good defensively because numbers prove otherwise, but they've always been good defensively. This team's got good weapons in different places. He's doing a lot of different things offensively. The team plays together. They spread the shots, and so they're a tough team to defend, and I think they're playing with confidence. Never easy to play on the road, certainly never easy to play there.
It's important to have that game be a big game in this city.
Yeah, I think that it would be for sure. I mean, if the years back in the NAIA days when us and Lipscomb and Tribeca were fighting for first place, when us and Lipscomb were fighting for, and 1 year we tied, actually 2 years we tied as conference champions. One was a four-way tie, but the other one was just between the two of us. Then those games were big and huge and covered and mattered, and so I think this would be a great rivalry when we're playing for that. And they've been there before. They dropped back a year or two, and now they're back up to where they're going to be a contender to win this tournament in March or in February.
Coach, always a pleasure, man. We'll talk next week. Best of luck this weekend, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you, guys. See you.
Absolutely there. The Tennessee State Belmont games, that could be some fun this weekend. Thursday night. So check that out. Thursday night, 5:30 for the women's game, 7:30 for the men's game. That's a good little crosstown rivalry there.
You know, and Rick Bird's a great coach. But Dana Ford, a really good young coach. He kind of hit on it. He has improved that team as much as anybody in the league in this period. And they're, not every job is the same. That's a tough job, and he's doing a great job over there.
It is a very tough job. There's no question about that. So, also some college basketball news around the country, and I think one of the biggest games in college basketball last night involved the Kentucky Wildcats and the Tennessee Volunteers. I think I'm going to ask you guys a question about Tennessee Vols and their fandom right now and what last night would have meant to them. I think you could argue it's as sweet as it gets for Tennessee fans right now. So we'll discuss how deep this team can go, and we'll get into the big win last night for Tennessee over Kentucky. We'll do that when we come back right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis and Braden Gall. And I want to remind you guys know that I switched to Xfinity, so I'm not using the other guys anymore. Most families have lots of different needs, different times of the day, different rooms of the house, and many of those needs overlap when it comes to our entertainment needs. And this is why Xfinity has the X1 Cloud DVR system and the Xfinity Stream app as well. The X1 Cloud DVR allows you to stream your DVR recordings to your mobile devices and computers while connected to any Wi-Fi or mobile network. For example, when I steal the television for my wife to watch the Preds tonight, or perhaps college hoops on the weekends when they start taking over here pretty soon. My wife will take her iPad. She'll go out to the patio if the weather's nice. She'll go up to the bedroom where we don't have a TV so she can keep up with her favorite programming anywhere in the house at any time when I steal the television. And again, it works on any Wi-Fi or mobile network. So if I'm out and about, I won't miss any of the action while I'm out, when I'm not around a TV. The X1 Cloud DVR and Xfinity Stream app are just two of the ways Xfinity is offering users the most convenient ways to consume their favorite content. Get started with Xfinity Internet and Television today for just $59.99 a month for 12 months. You get the X1 Cloud DVR, you get the Xfinity Stream app, you get the X1 Voice Remote, you get all that good stuff. Again, $59.99 a month for 12 months. Call 1-800-XFINITY or visit Xfinity.com today for more details. Offer ends 2/28/18. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Corey Curtis, News 2 Sports Director. Braden Gall here. We're going to talk with Travis Ryer from BamaOnline.com. It is National Signing Day, and I would expect Alabama to have another big day as they still have an outside shot at claiming the number one class in the nation. Shocking development. Nick Saban gets good players. Do we have a breaking news sounder we can use for that? I'm sort of tired of it, actually. So we'll talk. There we go. Alabama has good football players. This just in. It's real news.
Film at 11.
Real journalism.
Not fake news.
Real journalism there. Yep. Travis Ryer going to join us from Bama Online coming up in a few minutes. And I was thinking about this last night, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, so I want to get you guys' thoughts on this. Tennessee fans in general of University of Tennessee Athletics have not had a lot to cheer about, just in general. As an alum, I went to a lot of baseball games in college. They had a great baseball program under Rod Delmonico. I was there for the Lou Kochaver, Julio Borbón, teams with J.P.R. and Sebia that went to the World Series. Baseball was awesome when we were up there. I'm also just a huge college baseball fan, which is, again, I know puts me in the very small minority.
College baseball is good.
College baseball is a ton of fun. I've covered the College World Series in Omaha a few times. It's just such an awesome event if you're a baseball fan. I realize it's not for everybody, but Tennessee baseball has been awful for a long time.
Hard to understand.
Tennessee football, we know. We don't have to discuss and go into details on that and open up all those fresh wounds. We know where the Tennessee football program's at. Even the women's basketball program has had a couple of small question marks in the last few years.
They've been bigger than small.
Fair enough. And some branding and marketing controversies as well.
Those have been bigger than small, too.
So issues, let's say, in that area. The basketball program has been forced to fire multiple coaches.
Then chased off good coaches.
Chased off a good coach, which, again, I've said multiple times, I do not think that University of Tennessee fans should be proud of how they treated Konzo Martin or the administration.
No.
So all of this to be said, that barring a Tennessee football win in a national championship game situation, which would be, in my opinion, either the SEC championship game, which would get you into the playoff, a playoff game to get you into the title game, or the title game. So one of those situations. Barring one of those situations for Tennessee football, I cannot think of a sweeter moment for University of Tennessee fans of the entire university. I cannot think of a sweeter moment than going into Rupp Arena and stealing what is so dear to Kentucky fans, which is a basketball game in Rupp Arena. To go into, and Tennessee did it last night, 61-59. They sweep the season series for the first time since the late 90s. Do you am I wrong to think that might, because Kentucky is so, that basketball is so important to them.
Especially when they just did it to you on the football field this year.
Yes.
They took what was most dear to you and put it in your face. Now,
I think beating Kentucky in Rupp is one of the sweetest feelings a University of Tennessee fan will ever have outside of a football national championship situation.
I agree, but I put it behind one thing, and that would be beating Saban in Alabama. Not beating Alabama, Saban in Alabama.
Okay.
That's the only...
Right, it doesn't matter if it's Mike DeBose.
No, that's not the same Shula. Thing. Because Saban, you know...
Mike Price.
We talk about, you know, the championship, that putting you at the top of the mountain. Well, Saban is the top of the mountain. And so no matter when you beat him, you have beaten the top of the mountain. And I think that would be, you know, bigger cause for celebration at Tennessee. Because you want, more than anything in the world, you want your football program on top. And if you can beat who's on top, that gives you that thought that you are on top. And so that would be the only thing. But I think, you know, definitely whenever you beat, when a school puts all its eggs in one basket, and you take all their eggs, that's a great day.
Oh, it's so important to them. I mean, I'm not saying it shouldn't be, because college basketball is awesome.
I mean, look, Kentucky has made it clear. Basketball is number one, and number two is way down the rung. Way down.
Well, and what's funny is Matt Jones, again, Kentucky Sports Radio, was on with 3D yesterday, and he talked about how the crowd hasn't been good this year for Kentucky fans. Like, they've been sort of a stale, and I think Nick Saban talks a lot about this at Alabama, where if you got some truth serum and you injected Nick Saban with some truth serum and you got some truth out of him, he's sort of like, I'm kind of tired of the Alabama fans. Like, here you go. You get everything you'll ever need, and same thing with Calipari. You're going to get everything you'll ever need in the history of the world to win whatever it is you want to win at Kentucky for basketball and at Alabama for football. But in exchange, your punishment, your deal with the devil is you have to deal with Kentucky basketball fans.
Yeah.
And you have to deal with Alabama football fans. That's your punishment for getting five national championships.
Because that's what they expect every year.
Right.
And they're not going to accept anything less. They're going to have a level of arrogance.
The images from Rupp last night, at the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
If you're watching that game, at the beginning of the game, you're looking at fans and they just have their arms crossed in the stands. They're not cheering. Yeah. They're not excited. Matt Jones said it. He goes, the crowd has been bad this year at Rupp Arena.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, they're not as good as they used to be.
Yeah.
One time.
Well,
1 year.
I talk about this. I mean, look at the Titans this year. 9-7, 9-7, and the stadium's half empty. there is an Alabama mentality that has taken over a lot of sports, and that is if your team's not 11-1, 12-0, they're not any good and they're not worth going and supporting. You're seeing more and more and more of that, where people don't want to support teams unless they're championship teams. In the era that I'm the old man in the room, in the era I've grown up, in the area I grew up, you support your teams when they're good or they're bad. You watch the process. You understand where they are in the process. And just because they're bad this year doesn't mean, hey, I don't go to the game anymore because they're not awesome. But I feel like that's where we're at now.
But I think it only happens to certain fan bases that are so – because there's a lot of passionate fan bases.
It's happening to more. How many people were in the stands in Tennessee at the end of last season?
But there's a difference, though. Tennessee hasn't – the Titans haven't earned the support of
the
their
Volunteers.
Fans yet. Oh, Volunteers.
How many fans were at Vandy game end of the season? How many fans were there?
You're talking about a – see, I don't even think that applies. Like, you're talking – like, they
– You're fans of your team.
Oh,
are
I was
not.
So – no, I think you're totally wrong on this. I think Neyland Stadium – the empty Neyland thing didn't work. Like, they tried to empty Neyland with a hashtag and tried to empty
– There were a lot of empty
seats. And it was almost full for the South Carolina game.
No,
still.
But the Vanderbilt game, so, how many people were there?
That's – the coach had been fired. That's different.
Okay.
That's a totally different situation.
Okay.
I'm talking about a program that has winning with a successful coach who is revered by the community. It's too much reverence is where Alabama and Kentucky basketball and Alabama football have
gotten. Well, there's too much of a superiority
complex. You're being spoiled what it is.
This is the issue that I have in fandom as a whole. It's okay to be a fan of a team. It really is. I mean, that's what drives the train. But when you get your self-worth from the performance of your team, which there are states where they get their self-worth from the performance of their football or basketball team.
I always say, if your day-to-day happiness is predicated on a bunch of 20-year-old strangers you've never met performing an athletic
when you're
feat,
willing,
you're in trouble.
When you're willing to go kill trees because of the way you feel about your football team and another football team, you've taken it too far.
Yeah, and again, I think there's a big difference between protesting your organization when they fired a coach because we're fed up with the administration because they've sucked for so long. That's very different, in my opinion, for one game than what's happening for Alabama, for example, where you are spoiled out of your mind.
Yeah.
You are so spoiled that if you just lose one game,
The
fans are just
they're
so angry at Nick
him.
Saban. They're so angry at Nick Saban if he loses one time. You lost to Auburn this year? How dare you, Nick Saban? And
We need changes on defense. It's got to change.
That to me is a spoiled factor that goes into, and that's why Rupp right now looked so weird last night. Now, it got really good in the second half. The atmosphere got a little bit better because it was a close game and it was just a really good SEC basketball game. Two teams that are pretty decent. Good rivalry, good matchup, decent coaches going head-to-head. And Tennessee, listen, they got the big three when it counted. They got the big run-out dunk when it counted, and they made defensive stops when it counted. And that was a better coach team in orange than it was in blue yesterday. But the bottom line is they have gotten spoiled. And getting spoiled, I think, is very different than, you know, when you're angry and you get your coach fired. Like legitimate anger. Well, like, because your team actually sucks.
This is a down year at Kentucky, and they're 17-7.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Like, 11-1 is a down year at Alabama.
Yes.
That's the problem.
They lost a game.
That's the problem. Wow. And that's sort of what we're
fire
getting.
Saving.
That's what we're getting to. And I'm telling you, there's been rumors out of Alabama that he doesn't like that Alabama fans have, like, taken his accomplishment. Like, I'm the one who won all these championships, not you Alabama fans. And he's like,
well, because they're like, we are Alabama.
Exactly.
We are the best.
Exactly. It's just,
and it's not, because when they had Mike Dubose and Mike Shula, right, they were not the best. Right. Nick Saban is the best.
Yes. And there's this element of Nick Saban where he's like, I can't believe you guys claim all these national titles. You didn't do a dang thing. Well, I did all of it.
They wrote the checks.
I did all of it.
They wrote the checks.
I know. I'm just.
And they're writing bigger checks than anybody.
But there, you have seen some reports and some rumors that have come out of Tuscaloosa that are like some veiled rumors about, like, hey, Nick Saban's not exactly pleased with the spoiled nature of his fan base.
That his name didn't come up with that Giants job more. I was. I thought he might make a run at that.
I thought when who was it? Bruce Arians. When Bruce Arians said, "There's one job Nick Saban covets. It's the Giants." I thought that dominated the news cycle for a couple of days.
We didn't see. There weren't reports where. This may happen.
How about this, though? Why don't you ask that question of Travis Ryer of BamaOnline.com?
Okay.
We'll talk with Travis. He knows all things Alabama. And obviously, National Signing Day is today. We'll discuss all of these things with Travis Ryer when we come back right here. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Dun, 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 dun. Welcome back, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Hey, Alabama. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, Travis Ryer joining us here from Bama Online, BamaOnline.com, of course, covering all things Alabama. Travis, how are you, sir?
I am great. How are you guys this morning?
We're doing well. Certainly not as well as Alabama fans are for the last 11 years, I guess. So first, before we get to recruiting and National Signing Day and what waves we think Nick Saban could make today, the first question we were just sort of discussing, you know, as we were watching Kentucky fans last night look very spoiled on the television set, and because their team isn't quite as good, and there's been this talk about, you know, when Alabama loses a game in football, that, you know, that's a down year, 11-1, down year. Just sort of your thoughts about the relationship between Nick Saban and the, let's call, very passionate fans of Alabama football.
Well, I think it's fine. You know, it's as you sort of alluded to there, it's week to week. You lose a game, and, you know, it's apocalypse now in this area and in this state a lot of times, especially when you lose to your primary rival like Alabama did in the late November. But it's amazing how you can sort of replace that grade like Alabama did in getting that second life, so to speak, in the college football playoff and making right a wrong in the Clemson loss and the year before in the national championship game, and then the spectacular fashion in which they were able to come back with a true freshman quarterback in there in the second half and overtime against Georgia in the title game.
There's not a lot of jobs that I would consider Nick Saban to be remotely interested in. I mean, he's arguably got the number one job in all of college football. But I was surprised that we didn't hear more and see a bigger push with Saban and the New York Giants, with them in position to draft a franchise quarterback. I think they're picking second overall, and that reportedly being a job that he reveres. I thought that we may see more flirtation there. Did it surprise you that we didn't, or did more go on that we didn't know about?
Actually, I would have thought the first time around after Coughlin was replaced, there might have been more of a push before the decision was made to go with Ben McAdoo. Every time a job in the league comes open, you know you're going to hear Nick Saban in association with it. But I do think there are only a handful of the sort of premier flagship-type franchises in the National Football League that would actually make any bit of sense. And the Giants would be in that group. But he is 66 years old at this point. I'm not saying that he couldn't go back to the National Football League and potentially hang around for 5, 6, 7 years there. But I don't think the timing is necessarily as good as it would have been 5, 6, 7 years ago. And actually, when you look at the possibilities that have been out there in this last stretch of 5, 6, 7 years, probably University of Texas was the one that I viewed as the biggest threat to displacing Saban as the head coach here at Alabama and possibly having him go to another place. I think he likes startups as much as anything, or renovations, or however you want to describe it.
I think at the NFL, though, he knows the premium on quarterback play,
yeah.
And that's why I look at them with the second pick of the draft this year.
Sure.
That's why I thought the timing might have worked out a little bit better there. But you're absolutely right. Texas, those pockets are as deep as they come.
Absolutely. And a situation, again, when he says he likes, and it's interesting, we talk about personnel acquisition. I think he loves the setup in college football. He said it many, many times. Instead of getting one pick around, one first pick every year, first round pick every year, if he does his job the way that he can get as many as 20, 25 first round picks every year.
Travis Ryer joining us here from BamaOnline.com. So let's look at today then. I know they just recently had a flip here. They lost a guy to A&M, but I mean, really, this Alabama class is going to be spectacular once again. What do you expect to see from Alabama today, and what names do you expect to land in Tuscaloosa?
Well, it's a very active day. When you look at the announcements that are out there, and you're right, Bobby Brown, the defensive lineman from Arlington, Texas, has already flipped to Texas A&M, so not the greatest of starts for Alabama this morning, but you've got a couple of five-star corners coming up here. In the next 30 minutes or so, and Patrick Surtain Jr., Tyson Campbell, teammates down there in Fort Lauderdale. There's an offensive tackle down in the state of Florida, Nicholas Petit-Ferre, that's going to make his choice. So really coming up here in the next 30 minutes or so, all the way through, 3:30, 4 o'clock Central this afternoon, it's going to be hour to hour that different prospects around the country are going to be making decisions that involve Alabama.
Travis, give us some input into what Jeremy Pruitt looks like as a recruiter. We know what he brings to the table from a schematic standpoint on defense, but what is Jeremy Pruitt the recruiter?
Tenacious, and probably as much as anything, as good of an evaluator as Nick Saban's ever had. He is a big reason why Alabama, Georgia, Florida State, wherever he's been, and I'd expect this will be the case too at Tennessee, his ability to evaluate very early on in the process, and when I say that, I'm talking about kids in the 9th, 10th grade, and go ahead and be able to make that determination that this is a prospect that in a year, 2 years, the rest of the competition is going to be heavily involved with. I think that ability to evaluate at the level that he can affords him the opportunity to get in there earlier with a lot of these kids. And so he gets it in terms of the importance of it. I think, it's hard for any coach to truly probably enjoy it on a day-to-day basis, but he understands it to the point where he's going to do it each and every day at a level that most coaches won't. But again, I go back to his evaluation skills. I think that really is what probably separates Jeremy from most guys out there.
To me, you can always sell a program, but it's always about people, and the great people usually draw great people in. What is it about a guy like Jeremy Pruitt that is able to draw people in?
Well, he's a relatable guy. I mean, if you've heard him, and I'm sure you guys have, and he's one of those guys that quickly you get the sense that he's right there with you in terms of his ability to relate on just about every level. He's still a younger guy from that standpoint. That certainly doesn't hurt. But again, he's going to be there day in and day out. He's one of these recruiters that it's harder to tell him no than it is to tell him yes, which is the key to everything. So, and his relationships that he's developed, I think it's really benefited Jeremy in that he's kind of gone from the cart barn to the head pro position. If we were kind of making the analogy to a golf club or a golf course, he's been that guy from the bottom of the ladder to the top. And in making that trek, he's familiarized himself with a lot of the people that are impactful in helping him do the job he wants to do at Tennessee. That means high school coaches, relationships with those people, and, you know, everyone from the secretary or the administrative assistant at a high school to the assistant coach to the head coach at a lot of these places around the South, in working at Alabama, in working at Florida State, Georgia, back at Alabama, now at Tennessee, from a relationship standpoint, you know, Jeremy can go in depth as well as anybody out there.
Travis Ryer, Bama Online. Always a pleasure, man. I know today's going to be a fun and busy day for you, so we do appreciate your time, man. Thanks, bud.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Good to talk to Travis there. Been around the recruiting world in Alabama for a long, long time.
Probably was ready to go player by player with us.
Yes, he didn't get that. He could have, and a lot of good insight there on Jeremy Pruitt, no doubt about it. All right, when we come back, the biggest winners of the early signing period and the structure of the new recruiting calendar. And one of those teams might be right here in Nashville. We'll get to that when we come back. Corey Curtis, Braden Gall, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You are listening to 102.5, live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Before we get into who does the early signing period help the most, and I think it's good news for college football fans in this market in particular, I do want to give a little advice to some folks out there about Valentine's Day. 102.5 The Game and Woodhouse Day Spa in Franklin have teamed up to give away a spa package worth over $300. How much, Corey?
$300.
So this Valentine's Day, get yourself out of the doghouse.
One for every Spartan.
And into the Woodhouse. $300. All you have to do, very simple, very easy. Just follow us on Twitter, tweet out and tag at 102.5 The Game, the Woodhouse Day Spa account from in Franklin, at Woodhouse Tennessee.
Which is very nice.
At Woodhouse TN, and use the hashtag Out of the Woods. So all you have to do is put in that little tweet there, at 102.5 The Game, at Woodhouse TN, and use the hashtag Out of the Woods. Not hashtag. That's confusing.
Out of the Woods, into the Woodhouse.
Hashtag Out of the Woods. Spa classic package. This package includes a 50-minute Swedish massage. Check. Organic Discovery Facial and
Does that
Warm
mean
Agave.
Rene is giving it? Or no, he's finished. Sorry, that'd be Philip Forsberg.
I was going to say Forsberg, yeah. Yarncroke, and yeah, you got the different line there.
Pekka's finished.
Organic Discovery Facial and a Warm Agave Nectar Pedicure. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds spectacular.
Cactus juice?
Winner will be announced on Friday during our show. We will announce a winner on Friday during this show. Also, by the way, we have a big announcement coming up tomorrow as well. Special show announcement tomorrow. What time, Chase McCabe?
According to my sources, that would be 7 a.m.
7 a.m. tomorrow on the program. Again, Woodhouse Day Spa in Franklin is giving a package worth over $300 away. All you got to do is tweet at 102.5 The Game, at Woodhouse TN, and hashtag Out of the Woods. That's it. That's all you got to do. We'll pick a winner on
this
Friday.
This sounds awesome.
Woodhouse is spectacular. It is.
If I wasn't single, I'd, you know.
It's my neck of the woods.
That.
I'm not sure you're eligible, Chase.
I'm not.
My wife's a big
fan. Because I'm single.
Well, you could just win it and use it on yourself.
Oh, I thought he was just going to use it for his posse.
I could do that.
Give it to Ricky.
I meant your posse of ladies.
I could, yeah.
So can I talk about recruiting now?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Can you take a recruit to Woodhouse Day Spa?
Interesting.
Is that a violation?
I don't.
That's a self-report.
I'm not sure. I think it feels like if extra cream cheese on a bagel was a violation at one point.
Yeah,
I feel like taking someone to Woodhouse Day Spa in Franklin, by the way, would be a violation of an NCAA rule somewhere.
Okay,
I would agree. Although it doesn't stop college coaches from taking players to various establishments.
I don't know
what all
you're
over
about.
The world. All right. So this early signing period, I don't think anybody really truly knew what it was going to look like when it took place in December. December, for 3 days, players were allowed to sign early in recruiting. And for those of you who don't know, there's only been one signing day. It's actually runs for a couple of months, but in theory, everybody gets signed on the first Wednesday in February to go to play college football. And this year, they put in an early signing period, and roughly three-quarters of every player signed. So about 2,000 players signed in December, locking up a lot of classes, locking up a lot of spots, locking up a lot of scholarships. There's still about a quarter of the talent pool left on the board. There's like 14 or 15 top 100 players, about 50 top 300 players, so still some good players. But in general, about a quarter of the talent pool is still available to sign today. And all those guys will sign today. As I've watched it unfold for the first time, we all sort of have gone through this in real time together. The coaches, the recruits, the media, the fans, we've all gone through this first trial run of this together. And I think one of my theories, I feel like, has played itself out. And that is that the mid-level Power 5 program, and for the sake of this discussion, I'm going to use South Carolina, who's got a top 20 recruiting class right now, according to ESPN rankings, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Mississippi State. Those are pretty good programs nationally, but not the top of the SEC. We can all acknowledge that. I think those are the programs that have benefited the most from this new structure. Almost all of Derek Mason's class is locked up for Vanderbilt. They don't have to worry about it for months and months and or 2 months, you know, calling players, and they might get a kid, they might get two kids, but that's about it. They got their class locked up, and better than that, no one's going to steal any of those players.
Well, and I know when Derek Mason recruits kids, he wants to know that you are committed to him. Once you've given him your word, he doesn't want you taking visits to other places. And so you're right. This is right up in his wheelhouse. He gets these kids signed, and now they don't have to worry that Alabama or Florida State, who are fighting for the same players, miss out on a 4 or a 5 star, and suddenly they've got an opening for a player, and you've got a 3 star.
A high 3 star.
Who was going to
help
you.
Really good player. Right.
And all of a sudden, right, he's going to Alabama because it's Alabama. He may not play for 2 or 3 years there, where he could have played for you right away, but the allure of playing for that program, which you can understand would be intoxicating, you know, those kids get snagged away at the last second. It happens. And so to get it locked up and not have to worry about losing guys at the last second, it's got to be fantastic for the Derek Masons of the world. I think he's got a couple of guys signing over at Brentwood Academy today. Gavin Schoenwald, the quarterback, who I think is going to be a tight end, actually, at Vanderbilt, and a wide receiver, and forgive me, his name escapes me, but he's a heck of a player. They're getting two good ones from over there.
And it's got a chance to be one of the better classes of his tenure, if not the best class.
I saw, yeah.
And it depends on what ranking you use. Like they're all a little bit different, whether it's rivals,
but it's a good group,
or whatever. But it could be the best class that he's ever signed.
Number
in theory.
Of 4 stars and a lot of 3 stars. There's not a lot of 2s in there.
And again, like look at Minnesota. Nobody,
and they're adding Keyshawn Vaughn. By the way,
people in this market don't care about Minnesota, but PJ Fleck is Minnesota's on that same tier as a Kentucky or a Mississippi State or a Vanderbilt. And Minnesota signed 25 players. Every single player in their class was signed in the early signing period. You know who that hurts? Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
At Ohio State. That hurts Nebraska. That hurts
the fallback pool.
Penn State, exactly. Oklahoma State signed. I want to say Oklahoma State signed like 20 every all 22 of their players.
But
in their early signing
period.
But it
helps the kids at the same time. It helps the kids who are not going to have the rug pulled out from under them at the last second as well, because that happens as well.
So I you know, clearly this has been a detriment to the new coaching staffs. You know, Florida State and Willie Taggart, before they got him hired, Florida State had dropped down to like 6 commitments, and they were like in the 50s, which is just not normal for Florida State. Tennessee had a top 5 class. They fired Butch Jones. They dropped outside of the top 25. They were down into the 30s. Nebraska was way down in the 30s. UCLA was way down in the 30s because they both hired new coaches. Texas A&M has started to make waves and rebound, but they were not where they were supposed to be either normally as it pertains to recruiting. So the new coaching staffs are the ones that have to do the most scrambling, but they were new coaching staffs do the most scrambling anyway. And so it's, I think it's interesting. I think Jeremy Pruitt's actually done a pretty good job getting this class back to respectability. It's back into the top 20. They're on a lot of lists today for a lot of players. I don't think I've seen anybody pop so far.
It's really
that's
all you
can
hope
team.
For. I mean, in this situation.
I guess that's
no,
fair.
I mean, to be back in the top 20 and have, you know, to be competitive, you know, it's not a year that's going to set you back.
I think getting back to who it helps, the most important thing here is if you're a fan of college football, obviously you want your own team to win. We get that. But if you're just a fan of the sport in general, you want the most balanced, you know, I hate the word parity, but it is the best way to explain it. You want more competition. You want more good teams. You want more than just the top 11 schools every year competing for the same stinking championship. It's good for the sport that teams like Vanderbilt, Kentucky, South Carolina, Minnesota, Oklahoma State, West Virginia, that these types of programs can find themselves getting better. That's a good thing for the sport of college football.
Well, you want more 35-31 than 59-7. Because let's face it, college football has way too much 59-7.
Yes, and amongst Power 5 teams.
Yes.
So what you want is more balance within the Power 5. And if this early signing period gives us that, and it helps programs like Vanderbilt, and it helps programs like Minnesota, like Kentucky, then I think it's good for the sport. And I think that is ultimately where I would fall on this. If it's good for the players as well, they have a clearer picture of what the landscape looks like. I could not care less if a coach has to work a little harder. I don't care. I don't care. You're the one making millions of dollars. Shut up and go to work. I don't care. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just, if the one person this hurts is Nick Saban, oh my God, my bleeding heart goes out to Nick Saban.
He'll be all right.
He's going to be just fine.
Does Nick Saban get 8 5 stars or does he get 6?
Well, and he's the one screaming about how this is, I hate the early signing period. No coach says they like the early signing period. Rah, 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 rah. And then I'm like,
I bet Derek Mason loves it.
Yeah, every coach I've talked to, Steve Adazio from Boston College, says he loves it. Mark D'Antonio from Michigan State, he's dealing with his own stuff right now, says he loves the early signing period. You know, these guys that are protecting their classes, they're the ones who love the early signing period. So Nick is – okay, it might hurt you a little bit, Nick. Okay.
Because you can't poach at the last second.
Right.
Yeah.
And that should be fine with everybody in college football.
Well,
nothing. No, we should all vote against a rule that helps Nick Saban get better. Like, that's the rule we should all have. It's the Alabama test. All right, there's a new rule up for.
Does it help Alabama? It's out.
If it helps Nick Saban, I'm voting against it.
More coaches? No, less.
And it has nothing to do with Alabama, me liking or not liking Alabama. It has everything to do with
balancing
more balance.
The field. I would agree with that.
I want more balance.
There needs to be more balance. And let's face it, in college football, victories are bought and sold, okay? The amount of money you invest in your program directly relates to wins and losses.
Yeah, no question about it. Balance for college football is all I'm after. I have an agenda. My agenda is what's best for college football.
More good games. Exactly. That's all there is. And I completely agree with you. There are too many bad games in college football.
Barton Simmons will give us his thoughts from 24/7 Sports on both the early signing period, Derek Mason's class, Jeremy Pruitt's job he's done in Alabama, as well as a bunch of other stuff as well. So we'll talk with Barton Simmons from 24/7 Sports coming up next right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.